Hi, I'm Sarah Krimans, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension and Project Lead for the Military Families Learning Network, MFLN, and our Family Transitions team. We provide professional development, resources, and networking opportunities for military family service professionals as they help military families build resilience and navigate life cycle transitions. We invite you to engage with us and your colleagues in conversations on military family life cycle issues. Today, I have with me Dr. Leanne Knobloch, and Leanne is from the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois. She joined the department in 2002 after earning her PhD from our Minnesota neighbors over at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Leanne's research and teaching interests are in the field of interpersonal communication. She studies how people communicate with spouses, dating partners, and family members during times of transition. Leanne also teaches classes on conflict management, relationship development, and research methods. Welcome, Leanne.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Well, Leanne and her team recently published an article in the Journal of Family Psychology. The title of it is Communication of Military Couples During Deployment, Predicting Generalized Anxiety Upon Reunion. And so we're going to talk a bit today about the study that they did and some of the implications for military family service providers as well as service members and significant others. So Leanne, why don't you tell us about the study?
Thank you. Sarah, communication is a key way for military personnel and at-home partners to stay connected during deployment. We know that, right? And military families will say that communication was very helpful for them or frustrating for them, or they'll say that communication was particularly uplifting for them or distressing during deployment. But research is really needed to dive into what makes communication successful during deployment, right? Like, what are the key features of communication that make it successful? And then also, what are the effects of communication during deployment after military families are reunited? I had been working with some colleagues on a series of studies examining a reunion after deployment. That's a critical time to understand for military families. And so we launched this project. It was a collaborative effort. I worked with my twin sister, Dr. Lynn Knobloch-Fetters, who is a faculty member at Marquette University. And we also collaborated with Dr. Jeremy Jorgensen, who is a faculty member at Brigham Young University. And we received funding for this project from the U.S. Department of Defense, the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Programs, through the Military Operational Medicine Research Program. And so the goal of the study was to understand how the communication of military couples during deployment affects their anxiety after homecoming. And just to give you a little bit of information about what we actually did for the study, we collected online survey data from 555 military couples, so 1,110 individuals, and they completed an online survey once per month for 8 consecutive months beginning at homecoming. So participants reported on their communication during deployment and also their experiences upon reunion. So our sample of participants included service members who were active duty, who were reserve, who were National Guard service members from all branches, and their romantic partner, typically their spouse. On the monthly anniversary of their reunion date, we emailed participants a link to an online questionnaire, which remained open for 7 days. And by tracking people's responses over time, once per month starting at homecoming and continuing on for 8 months, we were able to gain insight into how their experiences were changing across the transition.
Oh, excellent. And the whole topic is so intriguing to me. I am a military spouse and my husband was deployed twice. So these findings or the whole study is very interesting. So can you define and tell us how you measured constructive and deconstructive communication in the study?
Yes, we included measures of constructive and destructive communication during deployment during our Wave 1 questionnaire, and we asked military couples to complete that Wave 1 questionnaire within a week of homecoming. And so we were trying to get, as much as we could, we were trying to get an immediate and proximal view of the communication that they engaged in during deployment. And in the online questionnaire, we asked people to rate their communication with their partner during deployment relative to a series of adjectives, things like helpful, satisfying, effective, useful, and valuable for constructive communication on a 5-point scale. And then we also asked them to rate their destructive communication using adjectives such as frustrating, upsetting, and disappointing. And when we started the study, we weren't sure if we should just measure communication tone in general, but at the end we were very, very glad that we measured people's constructive communication and their destructive communication separately, because as it turned out, those two things were not opposites. We wouldn't have known that if we would have just measured them all together. So as we get into the findings, we'll talk about that a little bit, but we were very glad that we measured those two separately.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So you also use the emotional cycle of deployment model in the study to connect communication and anxiety. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The emotional cycle of deployment model is really a conceptual framework for understanding the experiences of deployed service members and family members back home. And what it does is it divides the deployment trajectory into 5 stages. So pre-deployment, deployment, sustainment, redeployment, and post-deployment, which also can be called reunion or reintegration. And the model defines unique challenges for each stage. And it says that military families who can't master the demands of each stage will experience distress and anxiety. It also suggests that people's communication behavior in each stage really lays a foundation for their well-being in subsequent stages. So informed by the model, we reasoned that people's communication during deployment may predict the anxiety that they experience upon reunion. And beyond the model, there's research that shows that communication can be a double-edged sword during deployment. It can help reduce anxiety by calming fears and enhancing confidence in the relationship, boosting people's sense of security about the future, but it also can heighten anxiety by doing things like escalating distress, provoking conflict, intensifying feelings of distance between partners. And we know that a lack of communication during deployment can pave the way for anxiety by way of secrets and rumors and gossip. So the emotional cycle of deployment model implies a connection between people's communication during deployment and their anxiety after homecoming. And that's really what we wanted to drill down into in this study.
Great. We're talking about communication, so I'm really curious, how were people communicating during the deployment?
We asked people to tell us what channels of communication that they used, and then also how frequently they used those channels. And so that allowed us to understand which technologies people were using more frequently than others. And we know that deployment is constrained sometimes by the technology that, depending on where people are located and what they have at their disposal, not everybody can use every source of technology. But in this study, email was the most frequently used channel of communication. So our military couple said that they relied on email the most, followed by Facebook, which was another popularly used communication channel, then instant messaging, then after that, video chat and Skype. So that was kind of right in the middle, which we didn't expect. We thought that might be a little bit higher, but it was moderate here in our study. And then phone. And finally, the least frequently used channel of communication was cards and letters. And that's interesting because if we would have done the study several decades ago, right, cards and letters would have been the number one and possibly one of the only channels available. So it gives us kind of a window into the kinds of technology people are using. But interestingly enough, Sarah, the channels of communication that were used by deployed service members and at-home partners mattered less than the tone of their exchanges. So it was really about that constructive and destructive communication that mattered.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is interesting. I was curious if it mattered, and interesting that it hasn't. And as you said, for sure, the types of communication have ch available have changed over the years. But also, as you indicated, it depends upon where folks are and what their job is during the deployment, what they might have access to. Well, I'm curious, what were some of the key findings in the study?
Let me describe two other key findings beyond the channels of deployment, but there were two other key findings that we point to as being important take-home messages for the study. And the first is that military couples who communicated positively during deployment and avoided communicating negatively during deployment reported less anxiety at homecoming. So at the first wave when they were first reunited. So constructive communication during deployment was very helpful in that first week upon reunion. So that's a key takeaway finding. And it's fairly straightforward. That's what we would expect, right? There also was another finding that is a little bit more complex. And that key finding was that both positive and negative communication during deployment predicted a quicker reduction in anxiety over time after reunion. So the general trajectory was that people had heightened anxiety around wave one and wave two, and that generally declined over time. And we can imagine that that's reasonable if people are getting adjusted and getting sort of back into the groove. But this key finding that both positive and negative communication during deployment predicted a quicker reduction in anxiety over time suggests that military couples who are confronting challenging topics immediately during deployment adjusted more quickly after homecoming. So we reason that being engaged with your partner, even if they're challenging topics, even if they might provoke conflict, even if they're hard to talk about, so constructive and destructive communication, really helps people's recovery after they were reunited.
That is interesting, right? And I'm trying to wrap my head around that a little bit. And so really, it's important to have that constructive or positive communication, but also addressing some of those challenges, as you said, at the moment, address them, get past, and then during the reunion time, then some of those issues have already been addressed. Is that correct?
That's right, because just withdrawing and not communicating with your partner at all was problematic, right? So the sense of staying connected, the sense of staying involved and participating and engaging in that communication was important, whether it was constructive or destructive. What was problematic for these couples was when people withdrew and sort of disengaged from the relationship, that was problematic for reunion.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thanks. So let's move on to the implications piece. And I believe you have identified some implications for service members and significant others, as well as those military family service providers. So let's start with the implications for service members and significant others.
I'll go ahead and throw out three tips for helping military couples stay in touch during deployment, and these are linked to some of our key findings. First recommendation is to plan ahead. So definitely talk in advance about how much and how often you'd like to communicate as a family during deployment. And as you do that, it's important to discuss what channel each person prefers to use. Now you have to remember, obviously, that your access and your preferences may change during deployment. So you might have to revisit these plans, right, over the course of deployment because things might change, but you want to make sure that everybody is comfortable with how your communication is going. So plan ahead, but then also kind of check in periodically to make sure that that communication is satisfying the functions that it needs to during deployment. A second recommendation is to interact positively as much as you can. Stay upbeat, stay cheerful. Even challenging issues can be worked through effectively if you maintain a positive tone. So really do your best to keep that optimistic tone, look on the bright side with your partner so that you can sustain that cheerful tone as much as you can. And then third, don't sidestep important issues, right? And this is tied particularly to our key finding about being engaged in communication with your partner is the most important thing. So sweeping hard topics under the rug means a pretty big pile up upon reunion, right? So if you're able to stay positive, if you work to see things from your partner's perspective that will go far in ensuring that you stay engaged in your communication during deployment. And even if you get into the issues and you decide that you're going to dig deeper once everyone is reunited, that's fine too, as long as you're continuing to stay in touch, stay engaged, stay involved in each other's thoughts and preferences, emotions, daily lives as best you can.
Those are great tips, and definitely the planning ahead and revisiting. I know families typically, not always, have time to have those conversations and to really make those plans. And as always, revisiting, as you indicated. I really like the second tip with, you know, interacting in a positive way, but, you know, even on those challenging behaviors. So, you know, it's definitely okay to share those challenges, but in a positive way, and sharing perhaps some of the ways that those challenges have been addressed, right? So this is what happened, but we're tackling it, right?
And exactly.
So excellent. And then of course the third tip on not to sidestep those challenging issues. Yeah. Great tips for family members and significant others as they're looking towards those deployments. What about implications for the military family service providers that are working with those service members and families?
The project suggests a pair of guidelines for how military family service providers can support individuals separated by deployment. And in some ways, these mirror the recommendations for families themselves. But if service providers can help military families plan, that will be huge, right? Because service providers who assist military families in thinking through the advantages and the disadvantages of particular communication channels available to them will assist in that planning process. They can also support military families in developing a plan for revisiting whether staying in touch is working well during the time apart. And so if the professionals can really work with families to make sure that they're prepared for the communication challenges that the families will face during deployment, then we would expect that military families would have better outcomes, partly because they're aware of what they're going to face, but also because if problems arise, they'll have a sense of what to do about it. So to the extent that military family service providers can really help military families plan, that should be incredibly valuable for families. So that's one recommendation. A second one is to be really mindful about the timing of assistance. So support resources should be tailored to the stage of the deployment cycle for maximum effectiveness, right? This goes right back to the emotional cycle of deployment model and some of our findings that military families may benefit from communication skills training right before deployment, and also during deployment to stay connected across the miles. But targeting anxiety may be particularly useful immediately before homecoming or right after homecoming, because that's when people reported the most anxiety. So I think sometimes we have a tendency to throw all the information we possibly can at military families and hope that they'll remember it when the time is right or when that time is relevant. But that's not always the case, and there's a lot of information overload for military families. So as best that military family service providers can sort of time their interventions and their resources and their support for the most relevant periods for military families, that's just a huge service for those families.
Those are great tips. And so I think it would perhaps be helpful for those military family service providers to pull out and take a look at the topics that they are covering during those pre-deployment trainings with service members and families, and then the during deployment, if they're getting families together as well, just to see what they're addressing and if they're covering the topics, as you indicated, at the right time. So what a great opportunity to just do a check and see how they're fitting that in. Great. Well, we're going to be wrapping up here in just a few minutes, but I do want to share that Leanne has written a blog for us, and it's titled Staying Connected During Deployment, and that will be posted on our Military Family Learning Network Family Transitions webpage. So where you found this podcast, there will be a a link to access the blog, and there'll be some additional information in there as well. And also in the blog, we will make sure that we link to a Military Reach trip report. And the Military Reach does these trip reports. TRIP stands for Transitioning Research into Practice. And so they have summarized Leanne and her team's article really nicely. And so we'll have a link to that as well. So we encourage you to check out the blog as well as the Military Reach trip report. Leanne, is there anything else that you want to share about this project?
I would like to make sure to thank the military families who participated in this study and who participate in the research projects when they're invited to do so. I mean, without them being willing to tell their story and to take the time to complete our questionnaires each month, we wouldn't have this information, right? And we recognize that it's a commitment on their part to do so. And we're just so grateful that they took the time to participate. And we also want to just really encourage the military family life professionals. You know, if you come across research projects where the researchers are looking to recruit participants, they were so generous for this study in partnering with us and circulating the word to the military families. That kind of assistance opened doors for recruitment for us that we never would have been able to access otherwise. And so if military family support providers do come across these opportunities for research, just encourage them to do what they can to help out, because evidence-based guidelines don't come out of thin air, right? They come out of the studies, and the whole research enterprise is enriched if the recruitment and being able to hear people's stories will help the entire process. And then, of course, the resources provided by the U.S. Department of Defense for the expense and the monetary resources is huge for a study like this. And so it's just important, I think, to recognize all the sources of support that go into a project like this and to be really grateful and appreciative to not just the families who participated, but the military family service providers who helped us advertise and the DOD who provided the funding for it. I mean, we're just incredibly grateful to all those sources of support.
No doubt. There's so many players in making a project like this happen. And in order to get to the findings and the implications, there's so many pieces that have to fall into place. And I imagine that there's going to be a continued need for research and information like this, because there will probably be continued deployments and service members and families need to continue to communicate. So thank you for working on this project, Leanne. I also wanted to share that, and correct me if I've got this wrong, but this journal article was part of a larger project. And so we are tentatively planning to do another podcast and blog down the road just a little bit. Can you just quickly tell about that capstone project and what people can look forward to hearing more about?
Yes. So in this study, we looked at people's communication during deployment, predicting their anxiety upon reunion. And in the capstone project, major article from the project, we tracked people's mental health symptoms and aspects of their relationship functioning over time across reintegration. So we really wanted to understand the specific experiences that people were having during the 8 months following reunion. And so that paper drills down into reunion even more in more detail. And that paper has recently been accepted for publication. And so we're starting to get those findings out there as well. And we're looking forward to kind of piggybacking on this first paper with some additional information about that paper as well.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And I look forward to the opportunity to connect with you again in the future on another podcast and blog about that additional research. So folks, watch for that. But thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Leanne Knobloch from the University of Illinois. I truly appreciate your joining us today to talk about the communication and the implications of communication during deployment, during that reintegration phase. Folks, watch again for the blog. Look for that. And the link to the Military Reach Trip article. And folks, you can learn more about the Military Families Learning Network and our Family Transitions Concentration Area, as well as our other concentration areas that look at family development, nutrition and wellness, personal finance, military caregiving. I am missing a few: family development, early intervention, community capacity building. So there are a ton of resources out there. So you can find those at https://militaryfamilies.extension.org. Thanks so much.
This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense Award Number 2015-487702-4368.